Welcome back. We're now continuing our study of the March Toward the First Amendment, the history of religious liberty in America, the history of the First Amendment. We're going to Virginia. We're going to have a very exciting trip to Virginia during the colonial days. Before I start, I want to say I'm not going to give all my sites as I go along. I want to give you some of the main authorities I relied upon in doing this study. Charles F. James, who wrote Documentary History of the Struggle for Religious Liberty in New England. William H. Marnell, who wrote The First Amendment, Religious Freedom in America from Colonial Days to the School Prayer Controversy. Leo Pfeffer, Church, State, and Freedom. William Lumpkin, Baptist History in the South. James Beller, America in Crimson Red. Norman Cousins, In God We Trust. And then a couple of Supreme Court cases. Reynolds versus United States, an 1879 United States Supreme Court case, and Everson versus Board of Education, a 1947 U.S. Supreme Court case. Although the final expression of religious freedom that would be incorporated into the Constitution came from Virginia, the final motivation came as a result of the conviction of the dissenters, mainly the Baptists, and the thrust for their growth and influence came from the Great Awakening. Now I'm going to quote Charles James. The early Baptists of Virginia, while they could not boast of great wealth or culture or refinement, they possessed some things of more real value and which the Commonwealth greatly needed. In the first place, they had religion, genuine religion, not a sham, not an empty form, but the old-time religion of the heart. Then they had a personal worth or character, that character which always follows from having genuine religion. And then again, those early Baptists had an unquenchable love of liberty. The truth of the New Testament makes men free indeed, and it inspires them with a love of freedom, not for themselves only, but for all men. And it was because they possessed these traits they resisted the temptations of the general incorporation and general assessment, and stood their ground amid the general desertion. They resolved to continue to fight. Close quotes. The conflict in Virginia originally involved the Anglicans and Presbyterians, neither of which originally believed in either religious freedom or separation of church and state. Religious freedom and separation are owed mainly to the Baptists, who believed in both. What Jefferson and Madison wrote about and did for religious freedom, although leavened with Enlightenment principles, resulted from their observance of the conflict among Christians and is not to be found in the pages of philosophers of the Enlightenment. Now I want to quote some more from James. Quote, the Presbyterians in Virginia won religious liberty for themselves against the opposition of the Episcopalians. Next, the Baptists won religious liberty for themselves against the opposition of the Episcopalians and the Presbyterians. By 1775, about three-quarters of the people of Virginia were outside the Church of England, but many of the most influential Virginians were inside. When the war started, there were 95 Anglican parishes in Virginia. The war killed off at least a quarter of them. Nowhere in the colonies was Tory sentiment stronger than among the Anglican clergy of Virginia, and they found themselves at the gravest of odds with their flocks. Close quotes. The Episcopal Church, the Church of England in Virginia, was established from the founding of Jamestown in 1607. And I quote James again. It was known also as the Established Church because it was made by legal enactment the church of the state and was supported by taxation. Not only so, but it was designed to be the established church to the exclusion of all others. Rigid laws with severe penalties affixed were passed, having for their object the exclusion of all dissenters from the colony and the compelling of conformity to the established or state religion. Even after the Revolution of 1688, which placed William and Mary upon the throne of England and secured the passage of the Act of Toleration the following year, the General Court of the Colony of Virginia construed that act to suit themselves and withheld its benefits from dissenters until they were compelled to yield to the force of circumstances. Close quote. The Church of England was stronger in Virginia than in any colony. In Virginia, the established Anglican church was controlled by the state, unlike in New England, where the established church controlled the state. From the beginning of the colony, the company knew not how to control the members composing the colony, but by religion and law. The original laws divine, moral, and martial, which were decreed in 1612, were severe. Speaking impiously of the Trinity or of God, the Father, Son, or Holy Spirit, blaspheming God, incorrigibly cursing, a third failure to attend religious services, and a third Sabbath breaking were punishable by death. Other spiritual offenses were punished by whipping and other penalties. These laws were repealed upon appeal to England, and the laws enacted in support of the Anglican establishment were less severe. Still, the Anglican Church was established, and this establishment continued until the Revolution with one short interruption. Non-attendance at church services was the subject of fines. The payment of tithes were mandatory. Every parson was entitled to the glebe, a piece of land. Parish churches were built by taxes, and ministers were required to conform themselves in all things according to the canons of the Church of England. Puritan clergy were banished for failing to conform to Anglican services. Quakers and Baptists were fined, imprisoned, and banished. Catholics were disqualified from public office, and any priest who ventured to enter the colony was subject to instant expulsion. Penalties were imposed on those who, having scruples against infant baptism, neglected to present their children for that purpose. A 1643 law forbade anyone to teach or preach religion, publicly or privately, who was not a minister of the Church of England, and instructed governor and council to expel all nonconformists from the colony. In 1643, three Congregationalist ministers from Boston were forced to leave the colony. Also in 1643, Sir William Berkeley, royal governor of Virginia, strove by whippings and brandings to make the inhabitants of that colony conform to the established church, and thus drove out the Baptists and Quakers, who found a refuge in North Carolina. Quakers first came to Virginia in 1659 through 60, and the utmost degree of persecution was exercised towards them. During the period of the Commonwealth in England, there had been a kind of interregnum as to both church and state in Virginia. But in 1661, the supremacy of the Church of England was again fully established. Only ministers of the Church of England were permitted to preach, and only ministers of that church could celebrate the rites of matrimony, and only according to the ceremony prescribed in the Book of Common Prayer. Although some Presbyterians settled in Virginia from 1670 to 1680, the number and influence of Presbyterians in Virginia was small until the mid-1700s. In the mid-1700s, an influential body of Presbyterians settled in Hanover County as a result of a 1738 agreement between the Presbyterian Synod of Philadelphia and Virginia Governor William Gooch, which allowed immigrants to occupy the frontier portions of Virginia and enjoy the benefits of the Act of Toleration. The first non-Anglican minister to receive a license under the Act of Toleration passed by the British Parliament in 1689, which instructed liberty of conscience for all but Papists, was Francis McCamie, a Presbyterian minister in Accomack County. By 1725, no more than five conventicles, three small meetings of Quakers, and two of Presbyterians were licensed, and these in poorer counties who were unable to pay the established minister enough to stay. In 1725, a similar license was granted to certain parties, doubtless Presbyterians, in Richmond County. Presbyterian families from Pennsylvania and Maryland began to move to remote parts of Virginia on the western frontier in 1738. The Presbyterian Synod of Pennsylvania wrote Governor Gooch of Virginia asking for religious freedom for those Presbyterians. Governor Gooch, knowing these people to be firm, enterprising, hardy, brave, good citizens and soldiers, and desiring to form a complete line of defense against the savage inroads, welcomed them. At so great a distance from the other settlements, he anticipated no danger to the established church. The conditions of settlement were that they were not only to settle in the frontier counties as a buffer between the churchmen and the Indians, but they had to swear allegiance to His Majesty's person and government, pay the taxes levied in support of the established church, and never by word or deed seek to injure the said church. Houses for public worship could not be occupied without permission from the civil authorities. and each application for a house of worship was heard on its own merits. Those early Presbyterians did not break their promise nor violate their oaths. Up to the Revolution, they never demanded anything more than their rights under the Act of Toleration, and not until the Revolution was accomplished and Virginia had thrown off allegiance to Great Britain did they, that is, the Presbyterians, strike hands with the Baptists in an effort to pull down the establishments. However, with the fury of the French and Indian War, which broke out in 1755, Presbyterians east of the Blue Ridge occupied houses of worship without license or molestation. Different bodies of Baptists came to Virginia during the colonial period. The regular Baptists, like the Presbyterians, applied for license and took the prescribed oaths. As for the separate Baptists, the body spread so rapidly throughout the state from 1755 to the Revolution and did not recognize the right of any civil power to regulate preaching or places of meeting. They were the most active in evangelizing Virginia and most severely persecuted, and had the largest share of the work of pulling down the establishment and securing religious liberty for all. While yielding a ready obedience to the civil authorities in all civil affairs, in matters of religion, they recognized no Lord but Christ. They were truly apostolic in refusing to obey man rather than God. Conditions were favorable for the rapid growth of Baptist principles. First, the distress of the colonists, consequent upon the French and Indian Wars, inclined them toward religion. Secondly, the distressed people could find no solace or comfort in the immoral established clergy. And I'm going to quote again from James. The great success and rapid increase of the Baptists in Virginia must be ascribed primarily to the power of God working with them. Yet it cannot be denied but that there were subordinate and cooperating causes, one of which in the main was the loose and immoral deportment of the established clergy, by which the people were left almost destitute of even the shadow of true religion. 'Tis true they had some outward forms of worship, but the essential principles of Christianity were not only not understood among them, but by many never heard of. Some of the cardinal precepts of morality were discarded, and actions plainly forbidden by the New Testament were often proclaimed by the clergy as harmless and innocent, or at worst foibles of but little account. Having no discipline, every man followed the bent of his own inclination. It was not uncommon for the rectors of parishes to be men of the lowest morals. The Baptist preachers were, in almost every respect, the reverse of the established clergy. Close quote. The bad character and actions of the established clergy are proven by their own authorities. Many of that clergy came to Virginia to retrieve either lost fortune or lost character. Many of them had been addicted to the race field, the card table, the theater, nay more, to drunken revel. They could babble in the pulpit, roar in a tavern, exact from their parishioners, and rather by their dissoluteness destroy than feed the flock. The Baptists grew stronger and more numerous in Virginia. The first Baptist church in Virginia was established in 1714 by Robert Norden, who arrived from England. By 1755, there were 6 Baptist churches in Virginia. 1758 to 1769 was a period of slow but persistent growth in the face of a determined popular hostility. The early opposition to the Baptists came from lower classes and was based upon prejudice. The Virginia expansion was intimately tied up with the ministry of Colonel Samuel Harris. Harris, who served at various times as church warden, sheriff, justice of the peace, colonel of the county, and captain and commissary of Fort Mayo and its military garrison, was the first person of prominence to join the separates in Virginia and was just one of many examples of the power of this movement. He was saved at a house meeting after hearing a sermon preached by a separate Baptist from North Carolina. He resigned from his official positions and narrowed his business interest almost to a vanishing point in order to preach. He began to preach throughout Virginia, and many were converted as a result of his ministry. Well, we're about out of time for this segment, dear friends. Time flies when you're having fun. Stay with us. We're going to be getting in soon to Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, some of the things they said and did. Remember, they were seeing all these things as they transpired there in Virginia. And also remember, these broadcasts are being archived on churchandstatelaw.com on the radio broadcast page of that website. I'll continue after the break.